You're going to love my next guest. Anthony McNeil stopped by. He's a former law enforcement officer, retired law enforcement. After many years of dedicated service, he is also the CEO of Everyday Heroes Podcast Network, and he has his own podcast, the Off Duty Podcast. You're going to love Anthony McNeil. In this show, we talk about his law enforcement career, some of the challenges law enforcement faces, and his entrepreneurial journey, which I love. Anthony McNeil, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I hope you all are doing well. Big shout out to you, the criminal justice professional or the CJ professional, whatever you're doing under the umbrella of criminal justice. Thank you for doing it. Remember this. Don't take notice to all the BS and the noise out there saying that you are something that you're not. You are wonderful. You are great. You are doing great work. Remember this. You were honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. The vast majority of people in this country support you. Remember that. Take care of yourself, take care of your family, take care of your fellow officer, and come home safe. Do you want to keep your frontline personnel safer? Then you need to check out the products from Detectachem. This amazing and innovative company is helping keep you, the CJ professional, safer by offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of your hand, detecting illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. This application-based technology is a must-have for your organization. Head over to cjevolution.com and check out the link to Detectachem. Our show today is brought to you by Viking Law Enforcement Consulting, LLC. Viking offers assistance to law enforcement agencies and clients, including best practices, technology optimization, forensics, case reviews, and much more. Viking also helps companies bid for government contracts. Reach out to Viking today at vikinglec.com. That's vikinglec.com to schedule your free 15-minute phone consultation. On to the show with Anthony McNeil. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am very excited to have my next guest on the show, Anthony McNeil. He's a retired police officer serving 20 years with the Southfield PD Michigan Police Department. He's done a variety of assignments, very impressive, and he is the host and creator of the Off Duty Podcast. Tony, welcome, brother.
Patrick, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be a guest on the show.
Well, I'm glad we made it happen, brother. And first of all, I would like to thank you, and I know the audience thanks you for your service. And I always ask Leos, I know this is kind of a weird question, you probably hear it all the time, Tony, but why did you get into law enforcement? What was the catalyst, Tony? What was the reason that wanted to put on that badge and gun and go out there and protect and serve?
Well, it was none of those reasons.
You know, it's funny. I get that sometimes.
Honestly, Patrick, when I became a cop, I had gone away to college for a year. I was playing junior college football and I tore my knee up and I went back home and I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I started working at the restaurant that I used to work in before I left for school. And I ended up getting stuck there for about 4 or 5 years because I knew what I wanted to do. Ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to own a business. But at the time I was, you know, in my early 20s, didn't have the resources to do that. So one day I'm working in a restaurant and the new chief of police at that time, he's making his rounds, introducing himself to all the different business owners. And he just happened to come into the restaurant that I was working at. And I'm standing up front and he looks at me and he says, "Have you ever thought about becoming a cop?"
And just like, you
know,
that.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, you know, when he said that, all I could think about was, that's how I can get the money I need to start my business.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'll tell you another a side story to that. I went on and tested and I became a cadet and ended up getting hired and going to the academy about 6 months later. Mm-hmm. But probably about 2-3 weeks after I was on the job, I get a call to come to the station to do an interview with a reporter that was doing a story on minority officers in the suburbs. So I go there, there's no reporter, but there's a photographer. We take a bunch of pictures and he leaves. Never talk to a reporter. About 4 days later.
Where's the reporter?
Yeah. About 4 days later, my mom calls me and says, "Hey, did you see your picture on the front page of the newspaper?" I'm like, "No." So I go and grab about 20 copies, and the headline reads, "Minority Officers in High Demands in the Suburbs." So I start reading the story, and the story says, "Officer McNeil was working at the Pickle Barrel Deli when Chief Thomas came in and said, 'You want to be a cop?' And Officer McNeil said, 'Sure.' He said, 'Be in my office tomorrow,' gave me a gun and a badge, and here I am." I'm like, where did they get that story from?
Well, I don't like the heading, too, is kind of, you know, I mean, it was, you know, minority officer. I mean, you could have said we just, you know, recruited this great talent. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This was 92.
Yeah, I know. It's a different time. You know?
So it was what it was, you know.
Yeah.
But it was a fun. I still have a copy of that article.
I bet you do. You frame it, dude.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So we talked about this before we started, Tony, and you were a police officer. Again, thank you for your service for many years. Likewise. What do you see? And this is probably a broad question. I'm gonna ask you anyway, brother. Mm-hmm. What do you see some of the main challenges are for law enforcement agencies everywhere, internally and externally?
Well, I think externally, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious to anyone that pays attention. Mm-hmm. This woke culture, mm-hmm, that we have in our society now, and the lack of respect for law enforcement. And I have a theory behind that. And my theory is there's always been people that never liked the police. That's never going to change.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think, like everything in our society, certain people with agendas have jumped on this bandwagon and they really made a political issue. And they saw a way that they could use that platform to project themselves to another level at whatever it is that they're attempting to obtain, whether it, you know, it be the lawyers that are running around representing all these families or the politicians that are looking to move up the ladder there, whatever it is, mm-hmm, you know. And this isn't really a good comparison. But I look at it like social media in general. Yeah. You look at social media back in 2007 when it started. Social media was a great thing. It was started by a group of college kids it was a way for college kids to stay in touch with each other. Over the time, you have politicians, corporations, countries, all of these different entities that saw a way that they could use these platforms to, mm-hmm, advance themselves or advance their agendas. And then as these algorithms became more and more sophisticated, pretty soon all you saw in your news feed was things that you were interested in.
Yeah.
So now you have this division because everyone was backed into their own corner. So I think this hate towards the police, I think is magnified 30 times because of that. Mm-hmm. I think there's people with agendas behind it that are looking to advance themselves in whatever arena it is that they're trying to advance themselves in. And I think it's going to go away eventually once this noise wears down. Mm-hmm. But I mean, with the exception of the George Floyd incident and I can't remember the officer's name, but the incident with the taser, where she pulled her service.
Oh yeah, I remember that one.
Sidearms.
Yeah.
I can't remember the officer's name, but with the exception of those two scenarios, everything else has happened 100 times over and over again. It's just never made the news because not everybody had a camera in their hand, you know? And I think we as law enforcement from an internal side, we need to do a much better job of using social media,
absolutely, yeah,
as a weapon to help promote the profession, you know. And on my podcast, I try to get a lot of men and women on, and it irks the heck out of me when I ask someone to come on the show and they tell me that they have to get permission from their department. Why do you need permission about your department?
You're talking about We're talking to Tony on his show.
Yes. We're talking about you, not your department.
Are we talking national security secrets or something? Or what are we talking about? But that's the culture, brother. You know that. But that's the culture. It's, oh, my God, we can't say anything that might get out there. You know, I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah, and it's changing some, but we still have a long ways to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I like that.
It's changing a little. But we still have a long, long way to go, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's well said. I mean, I believe, and I don't want to assume that you're going to believe what I believe what I'm about to say, but I really do believe that the majority of people in this country support law enforcement, support our brave men and women. I only wish, like you probably do, I wish they were more vocal about it.
Yeah.
But like you said, everybody's in their own camps and they're afraid to say anything.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you can't even put a thin blue line flag up on your, in your, you know, yard in some places in this country, which is a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. And even that goes, I think that falls back into what I was just saying about people with agendas, because I think that especially I'm very standoffish when it comes to politicians. I don't trust any of them. I don't care if they're Democratic, Republicans, Independents, whatever they are. I don't trust any of them because they all have a motive. And that motive is usually money and power. And if they can use this group to get more money and power, then they're going to do that. And I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead, sir. I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah. And I think that, there are, just like in our profession, there are some politicians out there that are really in the job to help people and advance whatever it is they're trying to advance on the, in a positive way. But I think over time, they become part of the pool and part of the system. And they end up seeing the rewards that they can gain by playing the game. And I think that's how you end up with the division we have in this country, you know, because division keeps them in power, you know, and at the end of the day, we're all Americans first. I'm an American. I'm a man before I'm a Democratic or a Republican, you know, and I think we as the common people need to remember that.
I remember a time, and you probably do too, Tony, I'm assuming, where law enforcement, first responders was kind of hands off by politicians. I mean, it was, we were always in the spotlight, but it wasn't this all out assault from both sides on this great profession. And I always use the example of, and of course I'm dating myself, but I remember, you know, seeing Walter Cronkite come on the news when I was a young kid and he just reported the news. That was it.
Right.
That's all he did. And it was up to Tony and Patrick to decide what they wanted to believe, you know, and I remember politicians being like that, but no more. And I agree with you 150%. It's all about power. It's all about money. It's all about who I can manipulate, you know, to kind of use that. And it's a shame.
Yeah, it is. And it's unfortunate, but it's tearing apart a great country. But I do agree with one thing you said. I think there are more people out there that do still support us than there are those that dislike us.
Well, thank God that there are, I don't know about your neck of the woods, Tony, but there's still people. Well, let me preface by saying a lot of cops that I talk to are looking for an exit ramp, but there's still, you know, young, brave men and women who want to get into it, thankfully. You know, it's not in the numbers that I've, you know, seen before. Maybe you haven't seen either, but I mean, thank God that, you know, people are still wanting to serve.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because it's hurting. I think we're going to see a continued downward slide, and we're going to see more incidents, unfortunately, in our profession, like we've seen in the past. And the reason why I say that is because I was speaking with one of my buddies that still work at my old department, and he was telling me that now, once you get 2 years on the job, you're automatically an FTO.
Wow. Two whole years. Because that's the leadership void.
Yeah, exactly. But all the older guys either saw the writing on the wall and they turned the papers in, or they just stopped being FTOs because it wasn't worth it to them anymore. And they, you know, they put their retirement papers in and left the job. And now you have the blind leading the blind.
Yeah. And for all those people out there that have 2 years on, look, we're not making fun of you. All I'm saying is, thank you for your service, is, you know, as a 2 year officer, you're still we're always still learning, even 20 year veterans, but a 2 year officer, again, you're still trying to learn the job and to put that pressure on, okay, now you're an FTO and you're training somebody. Wow. And actually, that doesn't surprise me, brother, because it happened in my old department too, or it's happening.
Really?
Talk about liability.
Yeah, tell me about it.
No, and it's a shame because, like you said, a lot of veterans, a lot of, you know, people that have been around are getting out of it.
Yeah, yeah. I have a gentleman that I had on my podcast as a guest, and he's a part of my podcast network. He has 10 years in the profession in Indiana, and he just walked away, I think, 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it's a shame, and that's a good segue to what I want to ask you next, brother. I mean, do you think, and again, mental health is all the talk now. Do you think we're doing a good job with our officers, our first responders, our frontline troops with, you know, helping them with their mental health issues? And I think from my perspective, we're doing a better job than we used to years ago, but I think we got a long way to go.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And this is a topic that for the last 3 or 4 months has become really a topic that I've become very interested in. And I think part of that has to do with, you know, talking to a lot of the men and women on my podcast, because every time I had a guest on, someone would mention a struggle or something that they were going through that was related to stress or, you know, mental health. And it made me started looking back at my own profession, at my own career. And I thought that I got out of it unscathed, you know, and I definitely am not to the point where, you know, so many have unfortunately, you know, had to deal with PTSD and anxiety and depression and things like that. And, you know, even worse, suicide. But when I look back on it, as I've been diving into this topic and learning more about it, especially my last 5 years, it really did a number on me. Mm. And at the time, I didn't even realize it. And I think that we as a profession, like you say, we're making small strides, but I think we still have a long way to go in this area. It's a different time, you know. When I was on the job, it was, you know, I was involved in a shooting and not a single supervisor came up and asked me how I was doing.
Wow.
You know, it was, you know, hurry up with your paperwork and get out of here because we can't keep you on the clock for the overtime.
Jeez. That's that culture that we need to change in this profession. I mean, you just went through a critical incident and not one supervisor comes up to you. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I don't know if that has to do with they knew me and how I work or how I click as a person, as an individual, or if that was just their way of not really being concerned, because the incident didn't affect me at all. Gentleman tried to, you know, he had just tried to kill two people and he tried to run me over. So it wasn't a fatal shooting or anything like that, but the incident itself, it did not affect me in any way. And I don't know if those supervisors knew that much about me that, you know, not that if they felt like they didn't have to come to me because they know mentally I was strong enough to handle something like that. Or like I say, if they just didn't give a heck, you know? So,
well, from an outsider looking in, again, I've been through critical incidents and, you know, I think, like I said, and I have no doubt that you're tough, Tony, mentally and physically. But again, I think it's the duty of a supervisor to come over and say, hey, man, how you doing? I don't care how, you know, I shouldn't use I don't care, but, you know, you deal with things. Everybody deals with things in different ways. But again, I mean, it just kind of baffles me that no supervisor came up and said, hey, how you doing, man?
Yeah, not one, Not a single supervisor came up and asked if I was okay.
And you know what happens with that? You know this, is that the younger officers model that.
Mm-hmm.
The younger officers see that, and they see, well, the sergeant or lieutenant, whoever it was, they didn't ask Anthony if he was okay. So I guess when I get promoted and I come up the ranks, I guess I'm just going to model that behavior. It's like kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Sure.
Yep. Yep.
So
for sure.
But everybody comes out of law enforcement scathed. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do. I do, or I did, you did, everybody, you know, and I'm not, you know, coming down on the profession. That's just how it is. Like, you know, people don't call mm-hmm. us when things are great. People call us when you know what hits the fan, and that affects you over time.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you this, as a former commander, and this is something I would like to see changed in departments nowadays. I know briefing for me, that was a wasted 30 minutes. We sit there and, you know, you go over the BOLs and the runs and everything from earlier in the day and, you know, whose house you need to go check and stuff like that. But the most of the time, it's just BS time, laughing and cracking jokes on each other and stuff. Mm-hmm. I wish that departments could use that time just to take 20 minutes just to check everyone's mental health. Just ask, hey, how you guys doing Absolutely. Today mentally? You know, what's bothering you today? You know, I wish departments that should become, I wish that could become a standard across departments.
Yeah, I agree. The problem with that is, again, I mean, I agree. Once the conversation starts, I think that's, you know, breaking the ice. But the key is to, okay, are these guys going to open up, or are these women going to open up?
Yeah. But
I look at it, that's not an excuse not to do it. I agree with you 100%.
Mm-hmm.
If you get one person, and if you can reach one cop out there during a briefing or whatever, that kind of opens up, and maybe they don't want to talk about it in person. They come in the office or whatever, and you go that route.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you, you know, well, is we need to start having more conversations about this.
And I've really dived into this topic so much to the point that I've created a journal, and I called it, it's basically a journal that I created for strictly for law enforcement. And the journal is set up in a way that each day you check the number of hours of sleep you got the night before. You check your stress levels at the beginning of your shift, your mood at the beginning of your shift. You will also do the same thing at the end of your shift, and you will document your most stressful event of the day, whether it's administrative, on a run, something personal, whatever it is. And then you have a narrative form section where you can put in details about that incident.
Love it.
Yeah. And the whole point of it is to, as you said, we don't identify and we don't address. And how I came up with this idea, it's something that I wish it's the one thing I wish I could go back in my life and change. And that is keeping a journal during my career. But I came up with this idea because as I started diving into this subject, I kept coming back to an incident that I went through. And I had mentioned this earlier about my last 5 years on a job. I had to work inside. I was forced to go in and work the front desk, which I absolutely hated
mm-hmm.
because of health reasons. And one day it changed me as a person. I was to the point where I hated people. And one day a gentleman comes in and he's just being a total a-hole. And he and I exchange words. This goes on for about 15 minutes. He goes about his business. And about 30 minutes later, a lady comes in to make an accident report. And I look at her and I say, can I help you? And she looks at me and she says, well, I was coming to make an accident report, but you just looked at me like, what the blank do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And she was absolutely right. Because mentally, I was still dealing with the knucklehead from 30 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I never took time to address that. And therefore, now I have to deal with this citizen's complaint that I just got because it's part of that cumulative stress, you know? And that's why I came up with this idea with this journal, because at least it allows an officer to identify and address this situation before you go home. Because now, not only did you have to deal with the knucklehead, Now you got the citizen's complaint. Now you got to deal with the supervisor, not to mention the rest of the runs or whatever it is you have to deal with before your end of the shift. Then when you go home, your wife's telling you that the toilet's broke. So now you got to deal with that.
Well, I love it because, you know, it's documenting and writing it down is powerful. It is powerful. We can't remember all the crap that's going on in our heads. I can't. I know you probably can't. I mean, nobody can. So it's documenting it so you can go back during the day or at the end of day and look about what you wrote down. And that can start shifting your mindset, right?
Yeah. And that's the first step. You have to be able to identify and just acknowledge that it exists, which we don't do.
What do you think about, and I always tell people, brother, you know, I want your take on this. I always tell cops that you need to get cops or friends outside of law enforcement.
Most definitely.
Because that's one of the things that really helped me. And again, that's not a knock on first responders out there. It's not a knock. But the best thing that ever happened to me, or one of the best things, was getting friends outside of law enforcement. And then my mindset started to shift. And again, that's not a knock on law enforcement, but we have a tendency of being a negative bunch. So what do you think? You think that's good? You said absolutely. So I'm assuming you think that's a good idea.
Oh man, I totally agree with that. I was on another podcast. I was a guest on another podcast. And one of the questions that was asked was, how did I make the transition from being a cop to, you know, becoming an entrepreneur when I retired? And my reply was, it was no transition because a cop was what I did. It was not who I was.
Love it. Yeah.
You know, that was the one thing about me. I never allowed myself to be identified as just a cop. And I had my outside activities and I had my outside group of friends that were not in law enforcement. And I think that is something that anyone that is in this profession or is thinking about getting into this profession, you have to have a group of friends outside of law enforcement. Because as you just said, Patrick, we can be a very negative group sometimes. And it's unfortunate, but misery loves company.
Yeah.
And if that's all you're around, it's going to take a toll on you. So you need that balance.
When I tell people, you know, I tell cops that, you know, because they want to be entrepreneurs like you, they want to go out and do stuff, they want to start this or whatever, but they hate people. They don't want to deal with people. And I'm like, you know, the same people that you probably hate are the same people that are going to probably be there that you need help from. So you got to keep your mind open. Because as you know, Tony, you're one call away from an injury, God forbid something else. And then what are you going to do?
Right.
So what's plan B or C?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you don't think about that when you're a young cop. I didn't, but as I started to mature and grow into my career, I started thinking about that. Okay. I know my time in law enforcement is going to end at some time. Okay. What am I going to do after? And who am I going to befriend? Who am I going to have as mentors and coaches to help me get there?
Yeah. And like you said, you have to start thinking about that from day one. I recently just, started getting certified to become a life coach for first responders.
That's awesome.
And the young lady that I'm working with, that's exactly how she got into this arena, is because 4 years into her profession in law enforcement, she obtained a back injury that basically ended her career. And she needed something to pivot to, but she ended up going through that period where she didn't know what that was. And she ended up going into depression and everything else, because those 4 years, her identity was law enforcement. And when she lost that, she had nothing else to hold on to. So she had to seek some help. And once she got that help, she realized, you know, I can't be the only person going through this. And she became certified and started coaching other law enforcement officers that are going through this similar incident. And like I said, this mental health thing is really interesting to me, because I've learned a lot about myself in these last couple of months. I think it's a part of our profession that really needs a lot more light shined on it. And again, it's getting better. And I think that's because we have a different generation coming up than, you know, when us old timers was coming through.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And I think we got more outlets too. You know, you got shows like yours, like mine. We got more outlets where people who are not afraid, like you and I, to come on, and other Leos, not afraid to come on and say, look, we struggled. Mm-hmm. You know, we struggle with things. And I think that gives people inspiration.
Yeah.
You know,
that's for sure. And it just takes a couple of people to open the door.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully everyone else will decide to walk through once that door is open.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your show. I mentioned your podcast, my cast, the Off Duty Podcast. So tell us about that show, brother. Congrats to on it.
Thank you. Thank you. The Off Duty Podcast, like so many things, it came out of that awful year that we call 2020. That's mm-hmm. how it came about.
Was that an awful year? Oh, we had a pandemic, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, back in February. I shouldn't even say it came from that, because originally when I came up with the idea was actually a couple of years. I think it was back in 2018 or 19. I wanted to do a Facebook watch show. So it was supposed to be a video show, but it was impossible to get officers to go on camera and talk about themselves. So in February of 2020, I started getting into podcasts and listening to podcasts. And one day it just hit me. You can turn the TV show into a podcast.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I just became interested in Instagram. And I started seeing all these quote Instagram cops, and I was like, hell, these people aren't afraid to put themselves out there. Let me reach out to some of them and see about getting them on the podcast. And it just grew from there. And I'm now going into my 50th episode.
Awesome.
And yeah, thank you. Thank you. My podcast is different from other law enforcement podcasts in that I don't really get into politics and policies and tactics, and it's all about the people. Mm-hmm. It's 100% about the people. And I have four different segments to my show. The first one, I start every show off with the same question, you know, why law enforcement? And then I go into what I have three segments. The first segment is what I call Dig Deeper. And this is where I go through the guest social media and I'll find three or four posts and I'll craft questions around those posts. And then we'll go into the second segment, which is Random Seven, which are just seven totally off the wall, could be anything questions. They're all electronically generated, so I don't even know what they are until they're created.
Well, that's cool.
And it makes the show a lot of fun. People really enjoy it. And the last segment is kind of my rapid fire session section, what I call this or that. And it's basically I get the guests two topics and they have to pick one of the topics.
Yeah.
But you know, the format is made to be lighthearted. Is made to allow people to see the human side of the officers and learn more about those men and women as individuals and not just as someone that just puts on that uniform every day.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And we need more of that, because I think, look, there's a time and a place for war stories and tactics and stuff like that. But I like on my show, I like talking about, you know, obviously self-improvement, mindset, and just getting into that mindset of you can do anything. I'm not saying trying to encourage people to get on law enforcement. That's not what I meant by that.
Right.
Is that you can change the way you're feeling right now. You know, we have the most powerful supercomputer in the world, in the universe, and that's our brain.
Yep.
So you have the power to make things better in your life, personally and professionally. And I love that. And that's what I like talking about a lot. Now we cover issues and stuff like that, but I like talking about that and self-improvement. So I commend you, brother. Sounds like you're doing very, very well. Now, what advice would you give somebody who's interested in podcasting? There's a lot of podcasts out there, Tony. You know that.
Yeah. I think I read a statistic that said most new podcasts never make it past episode 10.
No, they die on the vine.
Yeah. And I think anybody that's looking to get into this this area, understand that there's a lot of work that goes into it.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of work that goes into having a podcast. I mean, from scheduling guests to recording, all the technical side to it, the editing, making sure your shows are sound, you know, the quality is there, making sure the show is entertaining. It's a lot that goes into it, and it's all about consistency. You have to be able to put that show out at a certain time each week or each day or each month or whatever it is you're releasing your episodes, because your followers come to expect that. And when you have that deadline,
millions, Tony, when do you start making millions? That's what people ask me. I don't know if they ask you. They're like, when can I monetize? When can I get a million downloads?
Oh man. Well, that's a whole nother subject.
That's a whole nother story, folks.
Yeah, that's definitely a whole.
I would just say, if you want to do a podcast, just do it. Pull the trigger.
Yep. Just start small, and just decide, you know, if you want to do a one man show or one woman show, or do interviews, whatever format you want to have your show structured as, and just go for it. You know, there's plenty of free tools out there that you can use to get started. You don't have to invest all this money like I've done here, and you know, just build from there and see if it's something that you really want to do. But just understand that it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a ton of work with sometimes very little ROI. But you do it because you're passionate about it. I can tell you're passionate about your show and passionate about mine. But you do it because you want to make a difference.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's fun. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy meeting all the different people from all across the country. I had a gentleman on from England, which was a lot of fun. So it's fun just meeting different people and hearing their stories.
Well, Anthony McNeil, where can people find you, brother? If they want to reach out to you, how can they find you? How can they find your show?
Just Google the Off Duty Podcast, or you can go to the offdutypodcast.com, and you can link to all my socials on there. LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everything's on the website itself, the offdutypodcast.com, or you can go to my other website, which is the Everyday Heroes Podcast Network, and you can find me on there.
Well, everything will be linked up in the show notes. Anthony McNeil, thank you, brother, for coming on the show. Thank you for your service, sir. And check out his podcast, the Off Duty Podcast. Again, everything's going to be linked up in the show notes, brother. Anything we can do for you towards your success, you're already successful, but whatever we can do for you here, please reach out to me. Let me know.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and just share some of the my insight with you. Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time and asking me to come on.
Amazing insight, brother. You take care.
You too, sir.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.